Welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast, your resource for exploring the world of disciple making and leadership within the church. Discover Jesus' strategy for raising up leaders, growing the church, and multiplying a movement. Let's jump into today's episode and explore the power of a disciple making leader.
Well, welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. My name is Glenn Underhill, and I'm going to be your host today. For an exciting episode, we're going to be talking about this idea of a ministry philosophy. We recently did a podcast on, you know, really what is a philosophy of ministry, the power of having one. But now we're going to talk about how do you get a team on board. That team can be your staff, or if you don't have a staff, it could be your key leaders, your elders, your deacons, whatever, however you're structured at your church. But just now, once you have a disciple-making philosophy, a Jesus-centric philosophy, how do you get your team on board with that disciple-making philosophy? And so I'm super fired up about this. This is going to be great. As I mentioned, my name is Glenn Underhill. I'm the pastor of spiritual development at Cross Creek Church in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I also serve as a trainer and a coach for Disciple First, and I'm here with my good friend Craig Etheridge, who has just recently written a book called His Way Still Works. And this idea of philosophy of ministry is a big piece of that. And really, we're just kind of fleshing out a lot of the book in this podcast. But so, Craig, why don't you introduce yourself, and we'll go from there.
All right. Good to see you, Glenn.
Yeah, you too.
As always, and here in the studio together.
Yeah, and you don't have your Topo Chico.
I know. I've just got the regular, Walmart brand water here. So. But maybe next time. Yeah, next time I'll bring a fresh, cold Topo Chico, which
maybe,
is my...
Maybe favorite. I was just being a slacker. Maybe the host just supposed to...
I know.
To
somebody... No,
you like
I should have brought my
own. Temperature, right?
Oh, my. So I'm Craig Etheridge, pastor at Cross Creek Church, and also just love the work with Disciple First, just training pastors to make movements of disciples, and... just super thrilled to get to be a part of this podcast and talk about the things we've been learning, because really, again, we're not putting ourselves out there like some great expert. We just run into things and then we're trying to work through them. And then we try to share that because we feel like other people are going to run into the same things.
Yeah, our church just becomes a great laboratory. I think we even said that the last time. You know, we just, as we're working through these same challenges and we're just realizing, oh, hey, we need to flesh that out, and then that becomes a tool or a resource that we use, and then we just invite others if they'd like to use that resource or tool, and sometimes they find it very helpful.
Right, and we're planting churches, so we are constantly working with church planters on these types of things. We have residencies, we're training residents, so we're trying to keep our finger on the pulse of leaders today and what's going on. We train over 2,000 pastors in-person training events a year, and so we have a lot of conversations with pastors that are wrestling with these very same things. So hopefully this podcast will add value to you, and today we're talking about this philosophy of ministry and how important it is, and how do you get a team on board with your philosophy of ministry.
So let's go ahead and dive into that right away and start talking about it. On our last podcast, we talked about this idea of having the benefits of having a Jesus-centric philosophy of ministry. So real quick review. In 30 seconds left, what is a Jesus-centric philosophy of ministry?
Yeah, so if a philosophy of ministry really is what establishes your why for what you do, what drives your ministry decisions, then a Jesus-centric philosophy of ministry is to say, what drove Jesus's decisions? What motivated Jesus to do? What was the when Jesus was looking for? And then how can I align ourselves to that? So a Jesus-centric philosophy of ministry would really be a philosophy of ministry that comes out of the life of Jesus and that clarified why did he do what he did. And that's what we mean by Jesus-centric. In other words, you can have philosophy of ministries that are based on your past experience or based on other types of things, but this would be saying this one resonates from the life of Jesus himself.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot because you put me on the spot right. in our last episode. Yeah,
last time I
did. So yeah. I'm going to put it back to you. So what was okay. Jesus' philosophy of ministry? If you were going to say what's his why is when, what would you say it is?
Yeah, so I think that the main thing Jesus was looking for after his 3.5 years of investing in these men was a making disciples who would create a movement of disciple making, after he's gone. That's really what he's doing. When you study the life of Jesus, you look at the chronology of Jesus and what he did year 1, 2, and 3 and beyond, it's very clear he was moving people through various stages of training right. to prepare them so that after his death, burial, resurrection, ascension, that they would be able to take that gospel and then multiply it throughout the world. And so if I were just going to kind of make a one sentence statement about Jesus' philosophy of ministry, I would just say that Jesus' philosophy of ministry was really to make disciples who multiply into a movement. Okay, right. That's kind of how I would say it.
Yep.
And I think we're kind of on the same page with that.
Total agreement with that. So let's even drill this down a little bit deeper.
Okay.
What would you, if someone were to ask you, what is the philosophy of ministry for Cross Creek?
Yeah.
How would you articulate that?
Yeah, that's really, really good because I would say earlier it might not look like that.
Right.
You know, it was definitely in the early days more of a attractional model. Really the philosophy of ministry was how can I attract as many people as possible and retain them so their numbers get big.
Right.
But that wouldn't be in compliance with or in alignment with Jesus' philosophy of ministry, which is about making disciples who multiply into a movement. And so I think today we're more in alignment with the philosophy ministry of Jesus. I'm not saying we're perfect. Of course, you and I both right. know we look at this all the time. We're like, oh man, we're really fumbling the ball here or we could get better here. So we're always fine tuning. But if you ask our senior leadership team, what are we trying to do? I think we would all be in agreement. Yes, we are trying to create a movement of multiplication. Yep. We're trying to make disciples to create a movement of multiplication. And that is in alignment with Jesus' philosophy of ministry. Now, it may look very different where we are as opposed to maybe our church plant in West Africa, or our church plants in Europe or in the Middle East. You know, they look different, but their philosophy of ministry is still the same. Mm. And so that's the beauty of a philosophy of ministry. It's what's underneath driving it. A Jesus center is Jesus then becomes the model. Jesus's way becomes the way that by which we measure success. But pragmatically, how that fleshes out is really unique to the context of every church, yeah. right?
Yep.
And so early on, when you and I were wrestling with this, I mean, talking way back, we had a philosophy of ministry that was kind of based on what our church experience had been and what we thought was successful and what books were coming out, and what churches were being talked about. But then here came the wrecking ball of Jesus's philosophy of ministry that really kind of crashed into ours. And we had to make a decision, okay, are we going to look at Jesus as the model and Jesus as the way for doing ministry, or are we just going to preach Jesus, but do a ministry a different way?
Yeah. It's interesting because I think there's some confusion based on a philosophy of ministry and a model of ministry.
Yeah.
And I would say that oftentimes churches are most concerned about their model of ministry, but I think a model is born out of your philosophy
yes.
of ministry. And so when I look at Jesus, man, Jesus had a very, very, very clear idea of what his philosophy was, and that set in motion his model for life and for ministry, mm-hmm. and so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. I think we, again, like you said, we're not perfect, but we're working towards every day trying to swing for the fence
right.
to really make sure we're in alignment to that. So let me ask you this. Why do you think pastors, staff, key leaders, volunteers, whatever that might look like in context of place to place, aren't necessarily on board with a Jesus-centric philosophy of ministry.
Yeah, that's really good. In fact, if you said that to them, you're not on board with a Jesus philosophy, they'd be like, what are you talking about? You know, I preach Jesus all the time, you know, or I love Jesus, I'm following Jesus. But if you really drill down into, okay, what type of ministry are you advocating, and does it align with how Jesus did ministry, I think you'd find that there is some separation. And even, I would even go far as to say that there are lots of philosophy ministries out there in churches today that are not in alignment with how Jesus did ministry. They're not trying to hit that same win of making disciples that multiply into a movement.
Right.
They're working on something else.
Their why is different.
That's right. And so I think the question you said, why are they not on board, is because they have a different philosophy of ministry, you know, and it's shaped by their experience. It's shaped maybe by their own other convictions, but they have kind of in their mind something different that's forming their why. And so they don't see that in agreement. And some of it too may just be ignorance of they really haven't studied the life of Jesus in a way that they understand what that even means.
Well, I was just, as you were saying that, I was causing me to think about, I wonder if maybe, and maybe you can speak to this as a pastor, to other pastors and other ministry leaders in context of whatever they're doing, but maybe even a misunderstanding of you know, because I think we focus so much on Jesus as a teacher, this rabbi, which is what he was in some part and function, right. But that did Jesus really even have a philosophy of ministry? Did he have a strategy, yeah. A model, right? A method, so to speak. And maybe you could flesh that out a little bit too, of even this understanding. I'm wondering if it's just a misunderstanding sometimes of Jesus himself.
I think you're exactly right. You know, let's face it. Most of the time, you and I, prior to kind of this revelation to us, we had never studied the life of Jesus chronologically, right?
Right.
So, of course, we're preaching through Matthew and Luke and John, the Gospels and so on, and we're seeing Jesus do these different things, but it kind of just seemed random, like Jesus kind of, he goes here and heals this person, goes here and talks to this person, and then he dies on a cross and rises again. And it seemed rather random, but when you began to study the life of Jesus chronologically, then what emerges from that is his philosophy of ministry. And I think a lot of people just haven't studied that. And I know I hadn't. But that philosophy of ministry became clear as I studied the life of Jesus chronologically. And let me give you an example of this. I know we can't, if we had video, maybe we could make this better. But there are certain logos, corporate logos, that have hidden meanings in them, right?
Right.
So, the FedEx one is the one I love the most. You've seen the FedEx logo, but if you look at where the E and the X are together, they form an arrow.
Right.
And I mean, once you see that arrow, you can't unsee it.
Right.
But how many times have we looked at it forever and never saw the arrow in the FedEx logo? There are lots of logos that are like that. I think Jesus' philosophy of ministry is a lot like that. We've been looking at Jesus, but we've not studied him chronologically. But when you study him in chronology, what do you do in year one, two, and beyond? Then what kind of emerges from that you didn't see before is his actual philosophy of ministry. What were the critical things? What was he really trying to accomplish? And how now all of a sudden you can't not see that.
Right.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, I know we're going to talk about this on this podcast, but how do you craft a Jesus-centric philosophy ministry? And I think it starts with that. It starts with really studying the life of Jesus chronologically, and we dove into that. We spent about 2 years just studying the life of Jesus, and it was kind of new for us. I mean, you're really going, oh, this happened in this order, and why did it happen that way? And then all of a sudden, we start to see phases that he was taking his guys through to train them and develop them, and why he did that, and what the end result of multiplication, and then how the Great Commission is just kind of a summary statement of all he had done. And all of a sudden, it was like, wow, yes, this is what Jesus was training and doing, was preparing them to make disciples that would multiply into a movement all over the world. And that philosophy of ministry became so compelling that we started looking at what we're doing, going, man, I don't know that anything that we're doing is moving that direction,
yeah,
or even looks really like that. Mm-hmm. And that's when the conviction really came.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think about this idea that as we studied his life, we begin to see certain practices and patterns beginning to emerge.
Right.
But then as you even drill into the practices and patterns, they were coming out of this philosophy.
Yeah, that's right.
And so we kind of worked our way from back to forward.
Oh, you're right.
And now we're going, okay, now you got to go the other direction. You got to go forward to get, you know, you start with a philosophy, and then that ultimately will impact your practices and or should impact your practices and your patterns.
That's right. In fact, let me just kind of drill into that. If I were going to give a pastor here, you know, how do I really craft Jesus-centric philosophy and ministry, I would give five things just very quickly. One is study the life of Jesus. If your goal is to follow Jesus, and that includes how he did ministry, then you've got to really study the life of Jesus chronologically. And you can do that through a harmony of the Gospels. In this book, His Way Still Works, we cover 36 key events in the life of Jesus chronologically. Right. And so that's a great place to start because these key events are events that if you take one of these out of the equation, then you're missing something important. And so we've kind of distilled 36 key events that are chronological in the life of Jesus that are really shaping his philosophy and ministry. So you could start there, but I would say start that. And then number two, once you're studying the life of Jesus, you're starting to extract transferable principles, right? That kind of emerging out of the life of Jesus. What are some principles that would kind of apply anywhere that were important to Jesus? You know, this is really the beauty of Jesus' ministry, that it can apply in a modern urban setting, yeah, or a very rural ancient setting. You know, we, like I said, we got church plants all over the world, very different settings,
right?
But these principles apply no matter where you are. That's what I mean by transferable. So Jesus had some principles that transfer anywhere, and that's the beauty and the genius really of Jesus' philosophy. And then once you've got these principles in mind, then they begin to distill into convictions. And man, these convictions are the things that, man, we've got to do this. And if Jesus had the one win of multiplying disciples into a movement, there were some convictions that allowed that to happen. And so we're going to do another podcast in the future on what are those core convictions.
Right.
But those core convictions have to be clarified. And then once they are, then those convictions begin to align your ministry. You're going to say no to some things and yes to other things, mm-hmm, based on those core convictions. Yeah. Instead of having a menu of, we're trying to be like the church down the street. Now we have a clear map of we're trying to move you somewhere, and these core convictions help us to do that. And then eventually those, you just develop metrics that measure, are we being effective, yeah, in doing those ministries. So I would say that those, of course, these are outlined in the book, but it kind of gets you, like you said, you start with the life of Jesus, looking at what are the principles that are transferable to any context, any culture, and then those distill into convictions, and those convictions then help shape your programming and drive ministry outcomes.
And you know, this whole podcast is built on this idea of how do you move your team to get on board with this disciple making philosophy, and I would say it really starts with crafting a very clear, concise Jesus centric philosophy of ministry.
Yeah,
that would mm-hmm be there. Yeah. But before we kind of launch into even thinking, because I know you've got some other thoughts on that, and I want to try to extract some of those because I think this is so good. Yeah. Before we do that, though, I want to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll flesh out some more of those pieces.
Right. Ministry can be lonely. Now more than ever, pastors are feeling the pressure of raising expectations among their members. Pastors are expected to be stellar preachers, effective evangelists, thoughtful counselors, courageous change agents, astute business managers, all the while steering the church to accomplish its mission. And all of this can be overwhelming at times. Wouldn't it be great to have someone in your corner, someone who understands what you're facing and can help you make the wise decisions that lead the church to make disciples of all nations? Disciple First is here to help. We can provide you with personalized coaching that will help you develop and sustain a healthy movement of multiplying disciples. Our coaching includes a free evaluation to identify your church's health and your current sticking points. Also, a roadmap for sustained health and a team of proven leaders that will give you customized counsel to help you move forward. Listen, you don't have to be alone in ministry. Let's start talking today. For more information and a free ministry evaluation, go to disciplefirst.com/coaching. That's disciplefirst.com/coaching.
All right. Well, welcome back. And Craig and I, you know, we've been talking about this idea of what are some of the ways that we can get our team on board. And you just talked about this whole idea of crafting a clear, concise, Jesus-centric philosophy of ministry. And you gave some really, I think, five really good things that are solid towards starting towards that. What are some other things that a ministry team, a lead team, or a senior pastor or such could do to bring that team on, whether that's a staff team or whether that's just key leaders, depending on their, you know, the size and the scope of their church? What are some other things that they could do to bring people along in this?
Yeah, that's really good. And again, this is coming out of our own journey, right? We had to, hey, how do we bring our team along? And not just our staff team, but key lay leaders, and then other people in our church. What we found is that where we were having rubs of conflict, it really was rooted in our philosophy of ministry. That person's got a different way of doing things than we do. Why do we do it this way? And so if we can articulate how our philosophy of ministry is in alignment with the philosophy of Jesus, now that kind of gives us a sense of authority. You know, Jesus said, all authority in heaven and earth is given to me, so go make disciples. We're tapping into the authority of Jesus. And it allows them to understand Jesus in a better way. I think you've got to clarify, what is your philosophy of ministry? Is it a Jesus-centric? What are some of these core convictions? And we put those in that book, His Way Still Works. But in addition to that, I think you've got to create environments to talk about Jesus' philosophy of ministry. Mm-hmm. I remember, Glenn, you and I, we got a fire in the belly about making disciples, and we're passionate about it. And sometimes I look at somebody and go, man, how come they're not as fired up about this as I am? You know, don't you understand what? And what I remember you telling me, like, Craig, you know, they just haven't walked where we've walked. You know, they haven't gone through this crisis, you know, and had the wrecking ball of Jesus' philosophy of ministry crash into their view of ministry and then grapple with it for years and then work through it and try and fail. And they haven't been through all that.
Right.
And so how could I expect them to understand it, you know, not understand, but to feel it deeply as I do? Mm. And that was really good to go, oh yeah, okay, well, I get why they're not as fired up. So what we did was we created a cohort and we introduced to our team, books that we had read, you know, years ago. We went back 25 years ago to some great books that informed our view and other godly people that had spoken in our life. You know, we're so thankful for Bill Hull. We're so thankful for Dan Spader, Eddie Broussard, you know, Ken Adams. Just, I mean, we could go down the list of guys that we have learned so much from.
Right.
And we just started exposing some of their writings to these guys. And then it was cool because you could start to see the light bulbs come on.
Yep.
And they hadn't wrestled with it to the extent we have, but we were exposing them to this philosophy of ministry, and they were understanding it more and more.
Yeah, and it was funny because I remember even, you know, doing that cohort, it was fun watching because it was almost as though it was like back when we were wrestling with some of these issues going, man, do I really agree? Or am I trying to just, you know, squeeze this more than it's really there? And we had some tough conversations, but it was so healthy and so good because some of those hard conversations brought forth oh, well, maybe my life and ministry aren't as aligned to Jesus' life and ministry as I, and his philosophy as I thought maybe it might be. And I think a cohort is definitely, and we did that cohort. We told our team, hey, we expect for you to be here. Yep. And we put it during their office hours. We actually did it 30 minutes earlier than we normally open, but we also said, hey, we're not going to ask you for extra hours or take away from multiple additional things. We put it into the context of our already existing time. We, again, a little bit early, but not much.
Right.
But I do think that was a really, really eye-opening light bulb moment for a lot on our team doing that cohort. Was really good. What are some other things?
I would just add to that, Glenn, that when you do a cohort like that, you need to give freedom for them to wrestle with it,
right,
and to challenge and push back, because Jesus challenges us. I mean, that's who he is. You know, he's constantly challenging.
Right.
He was challenging the religious leaders of his day, and they resisted him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was constantly challenging that, and he still challenges us today, and still challenges why we do what we do. And it is by nature a bit confrontational.
Mm.
But let them wrestle with it. Mm. You know, don't get defensive. Don't get mad. Don't just say, well, this is how it's going to be here. You know, let them wrestle. Let Jesus tease these things out. Mm. And I remember there were times when it was unresolved. We'd leave, and then I have to go sleep on it and pray about it. But kind of over the course of time, they started to go, oh, I understand now. This is not just you have to have a discipleship group.
Right.
This is a whole lot deeper than that.
Right.
You know, he's challenging my experience and what I believe to be true about ministry. And those are hard things. You can't just do that in a one-time shot.
Right.
You got to give some time for that. But I think coming out of it, our team was much more in alignment, much more in agreement to our philosophy, and could stand on Jesus's philosophy of ministry is a solid rock, right?
Mm-hmm.
When they're challenged by other leaders.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, no, I think that's really good.
You know, give space and time for that wrestle to happen.
So you'd say to getting some of your people on board, on your team on board, one, you got to have crafted a very clear philosophy of ministry, Jesus-centric philosophy of ministry. A cohort is another practical expression of how to continue to do that. Is there anything else that you might recommend?
Yeah, you know, I think that the reason why we wrote this book, His Way Still Works, is because it's all about this. It's exposing you to 36 key events in the life of Jesus, and then talking about his philosophy of ministry, and then distilling 7 core convictions. And the reason why we wrote it was because we wanted to then move not just to our staff, but even down to our key leaders. We thought, man, every Connect Group leader, you know, needs to have, understand this, you know, and people that are on our leadership teams need to understand this. I mean, this is a way you can bring cohesion to the whole church. Yep. And so we thought, well, how are we going to distill that? Not everybody's going to give us a cohort, you know, like that. And so we wrote the book so that we could put it in the hands of these next level emerging leaders and then help them walk through it and read through it and get their own wrestle in there. And what we're finding is, man, I've had so many people shoot me a text, thank you, this makes so much more sense. I understand now why we do what we do, and I'm even more on board with it, having read the life of Jesus. So I would say don't neglect the next level of leaders,
right?
Because you really want people, if they're making decisions of your church, they need to be bought into your philosophy.
Yeah, so I guess what I hear you saying is even the next click down, giving a resource that maybe you've used in your cohort, whether that be His Way Still Works or a book or whatever, but saying, hey, read this because I think it will help to continue to further that down the road. So one last little thing I want to ask, this is, I think, something that maybe a lot of people are going to wrestle with. What do you do if maybe the senior pastor, senior leader, the lead pastor, whatever that word might be, or the leadership team of the church, the elders, whatever, don't have this same philosophy of ministry, what should I do if I'm on a staff or I'm at maybe at a church that I'm serving and working, but I feel like it's where I need to be? What do they do? What will some do?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Glenn. And of course, you and I see this all the time.
Right.
And I don't know how many trainings I've done where somebody said, man, I couldn't get my pastor to come to this. I really wish they would buy into this. What do I do? And I would just say that if you are, let's say you're a staff person. Let's say you're a youth pastor, worship pastor, you know, whatever. You know, you don't have to necessarily have your pastor on board with this philosophy to lead this way, mm-hmm. for you to have this philosophy of ministry. And I think you can lead your teams with this view, hey, rooting in the life of Jesus and helping them know who Jesus is and studying the life of Christ and what is our philosophy of ministry, why we do what we do. I think you can live that out. Mm. I think you can also, encourage your pastor to, you know, read some of these things or come to a training or listen to this podcast, mm-hmm. and just see what he thinks about it.
Right.
You know, I think that those are all really good things. I think you have to understand that every person, like you always say, Glenn, every person has a philosophy of ministry, and it comes from somewhere. Mm. And maybe even a great discussion is, you know, what is your pastor? What is your philosophy of ministry? Where did it come from? What informed that? Mm. Where do you see it in the future? Sometimes just that learning and understanding and conversation, not in a judgmental way, like you're not doing it right.
Right.
But just to understand where he's coming from can be very helpful and informative. But you know, obviously for the lead pastor to have a Jesus-centered philosophy of ministry would be necessary for the whole church to embrace that.
Yeah.
It might be found in pockets, but the lead pastor really sets the tone for the entire organization.
Yeah, and I might just add too, just as a word of encouragement, if you're out there and you're listening to this and you're like, yeah, I can resonate with this, you know, just to encourage you to be patient and diligent and faithful to this philosophy of ministry. And sometimes what has to happen is sometimes a lead pastor or maybe lead key leaders will see the results, the outcomes from some of these things, and it starts to permeate and change some things, and people start asking questions, and it opens the windows of opportunity to talk about it. And I have seen that on multiple occasions with teams we've worked with, particularly like youth pastors or such. But I think There comes a time also, too, that if in the event that, you know, I do know sometimes these things can kind of create some tension. And I think that's where you'd have to really go to the Lord and say, okay, I want to be a faithful steward, not only of keeping the harmony of the church in the right direction, but also be consistent with what I believe, Jesus, you've called me to as well. And so there may be some wrestling questions that have to come out of that as well. But I do want to just encourage you and say, hey, if you've got the freedom to do that, roll with it and watch what God does through a real lined up Jesus ministry philosophy. Sometimes it can really change things as it gets into the leaven and really starts to create some neat things, some real seismic transformation in people's lives.
You know, I want to add to Glenn, and not to be Debbie Downer here, but you know, ultimately, your lead pastor is responsible for the whole church, and you don't want to be doing things that are circumventing or warring against the direction he feels like the church should go.
Right?
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You're not trying to run a coup on this situation. You know, so you need to think that through. And if your pastor says, well, that's not how we're doing things here, then you have a decision to make. Maybe that's God moving you somewhere else.
That's right.
And that's okay. And that doesn't mean that he's bad and you're only good or anything like that. at all. But I think that as what we've said earlier about philosophy of ministry, it should create cohesion
yes.
on your team, not division
yes.
on your team. And so if you feel like, hey, I just don't know that I can agree with that, and that's getting your attitude sideways and that type of thing, then maybe it's best for you to, you know, do something different in order to honor and respect your leader and to be a support to him, then that's okay too.
Yeah. And I think it also gives you some great credibility as you're stepping into maybe a new season of ministry to maybe ask some better questions on the front end. Am I going to a place that we're in alignment with yes. ministry philosophy, a philosophy of ministry. So that great conversation. Again, we could probably spend so much time on it, but thank you for your time today. Yeah. It's been great talking about this whole idea of how do we get our team on board with a disciple-making philosophy of ministry. But just want to quickly remind you that really Disciple First really exists to empower ministry leaders, church leaders, to really make and multiply disciples like Jesus. And we have some great resources, but we wanted just to make you aware of a new resource that we have that Pastor Craig just wrote called His Way Still Works. And a lot of what we're talking about is actually in this book, and you can get that at disciplefirst.com. And you can actually use a coupon code called HISWAY20. HISWAY20, get 20% off and order that resource and use it as a way to really begin to formulate this idea of how do I develop a philosophy of ministry and even develop some core convictions along the way that are in alignment to what Jesus' core convictions are so you can move your ministry in that direction. So again, thank you for being with us on this broadcast, and we look forward to seeing you and hearing from you real soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Disciple Making Leader podcast, brought to you by Disciple First. We hope today's episode has been both helpful and challenging in your journey to becoming a disciple making leader. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure you hear the next episode. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a review and share this podcast with your friends. Until next time, keep making Jesus the model for your life and ministry.